Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Whoa, listen to that pour of Bogotá wine. Dr. Turnbull, in studio, please talk to about your wine for 2 seconds.
Wine from just south of Barcelona, Grenache Blanca. Americans have no idea what a Grenache Blanca is, and we have Brad and Jonathan here to give a tasting notes.
This is a delicious wine. It's really nice, light, and crisp. It has some good minerality to it. Yeah, I think it would pair really well with what we have on the menu right now. It would be a scallop dish. What do you think, Mr. Black?
Yeah, I think the acidity of the wine would go very nicely with the balance with the acidity from the apricots, and then there's a brown butter sauce on the dish that would kind of help cut that fattiness.
You know what? I've had this dish. I've actually had it twice. I agree with you guys 100%. Dr. Turnbull, any other notes?
No, you can find it on the website. If you guys are listening, just click and buy it and take it from there. That's it.
Once again, Bogotá, Savorian Wine, sponsor of The Morning After. Stay tuned. I'm going to jump right into the show today. I have an all-star cast here of restaurant movers and shakers of New York City, the wine world, the food world, chefs, bartenders, whatever you want to call them. I have Tawar Tribeca in studio. I have the Fonda Nolita, Northern Spy Company. I have Dr. Brendan Mack Repair calling in. I also have a friend out in California. He's going to review a restaurant. We spoke briefly about it. I told him I wanted him to review A16, actually. He couldn't get to A16, so he did another restaurant. But that's kind of where we're at right now. I'm also... It's kind of a busy week. We had the death of Steve Jobs this week. So Dr. Brendan's going to come in and talk a little bit about that. I think that's huge in terms of the food world because the secondary app market has created an entire industry for us, and it's helped out a lot for people searching for restaurants or searching for places to eat. We got a somebody's calling in. I have a call in. Look at this. Somebody's actually listening to the show. Hello. Well, you're the morning after. Who is this?
Oh, hi. Oh, my God. I can't believe I got through. My name is Luann.
How
are you?
What is your name?
Luann.
Luann, where are you from?
I'm from Charleston, South Carolina.
Charleston, South Carolina. And wait, they're listening to The Morning After in Charleston, South Carolina?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's on the internet, so I can listen to it.
They have the internet down there?
Very funny, yes. We are actually a pretty well-educated people down here, despite what some people say.
No, I didn't think that. I just thought... I didn't say you weren't educated.
You're living in the Stone Age.
No, I don't think you're living in the Stone Age. I think you're still, there's a war going on down there, still going on. That was a joke. What's up? You want to make a comment? Is something going on with the show?
Well, I had a question. Now, I've been listening to your radio station since y'all started, and your show in particular.
And that was 4 shows ago. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. But I was wondering, I went to school a long time ago with Stephen Kahn, and he was hilarious the first 2 shows, and you didn't put him on last week, and I was wondering if you were going to put him on this week, because I just thought he was so funny, and I thought you should give him another chance.
Well, it's Luann, right? Well, Luann, Stephen Kahn was doing a movie review, and we were doing let me finish. Jack, cut her vocals off for 2 seconds. Thank you. We were doing a movie review here, and we were doing a food-centric. We did Cocktail, and then we did the Loverboy with Patrick Dempsey, and it went well, and I told Steven to sort of take a few weeks off and sort of recalculate his reviewing, because he wasn't doing any reviewing. He just wanted to hear his voice. I mean, and that's safe for the host, listening to, constantly.
I'm over it a little bit, but that second one was much better, although I don't know why you picked Loverboy for him.
Well, Loverboy's a movie about a pizza delivery guy. Do you have anything else you want to contribute, or no?
No, I was just asking if Stephen Kahn was going to come back on, because I just really like
actually, Stephen Kahn is a film major, and he was hired to do the there's a production company that I have called Righteous Fiction with my business partner, Chad Turnbull, and we were doing a reality-based TV show about a restaurant opening in Brooklyn, and I hired him as a director, and they just sort of broke ground on that, meaning the restaurant just got the keys for the space, and he's covering that. So he might tune in once in a while with a movie review, or he might tune in and talk about the progress with the documentary that he's doing about this restaurant opening. So, but I apologize to you. But do you like the show otherwise?
That's great. It's really fun to listen to you.
Luann, thank you. Please feel free to call in. By the way, you are our first caller. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, well, very cool. All right. Well, I'll be listening.
Okay, great. Well, from there, I'm going to go into my first guest, Oscar Hernandez. Oscar and myself, we worked at Centrico Restaurant many years ago under Drew Neporant. Aaron Sanchez was the chef. And I'm not sure if he's still the chef of that restaurant, but he is still the chef of the restaurant. And we kind of sort of found each other 3 or 4 years later in Nolita. We work in the same neighborhood now, and he is the chef de cuisine of a popular, I would say, Tacombe, sort of traditional taco spot. Finalita taco?
Yeah, it's a traditional taqueria. That's what we do.
Well, and what if a traditional taqueria, is there a name for that, or is it?
It's just a taqueria. It's a style of restaurant. It's not a full restaurant. We only serve tacos and a few other stuff.
Now, Aaron Sanchez is the chef of that restaurant, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you sort of facilitate the menu. What kind of stuff are you guys doing over there?
Well, we do very traditional stuff. Like in Mexico, there's such a big variety of tacos that you can find from each corner to the other corner. So basically what we're doing is like not sticking with the same tacos that you normally see in New York.
Similar to sort of, you know, Italian food where, yeah, you know, at a certain point in time, everyone's like chicken parmesan and this or Italian, yeah, food. And then sort of, you know, the Mario Batali's of the world came and redefined regional Italian cooking. And Rick Bayless does that a little bit now. And Aaron sort of, you know, he has a niche kind of a market in terms of being on TV and having a lot of restaurants. But on top of it, this is a really cool restaurant to walk in. It's on Elizabeth Street. It's sort of just south of Houston. And they have you guys have a Volkswagen.
Yeah, it's a BMW bus from the 60s.
Okay.
And basically it's called Tacombi because in Mexico, those kind of buses are called combis. So, you know, in the night when drinks were around, we create the word Tacombi, taco.
But combi. Why would they call them combi? What's that about?
That's the name of the BMW bus in Mexico. They call them combis.
Don't they still manufacture?
I think they stopped like in the 2000 and something, but like.
But they were for a while.
Yeah. You see them everywhere. There's like actually public transportation.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the menu there, other than tacos, because this is a cool spot. You kind of walk in, and the thing is, it has this look about it that is very traditional, sort of Mexican. But then you go to this, you know, really attractive young lady, and she has an iPad taking your order you're buying tacos, and she gives you so it's not a traditional style restaurant. How do you order?
Well, somehow you need to like introduce technology to the old school kind of restaurant that we have. And basically how it is like you just go place your order. The place is set up as a Mexican street. Like a party.
There's actually dogs running around there too.
Yeah,
no, it's not a joke. I mean, I've seen. Anyway, it's dog friendly.
It's not dog friendly. I mean, but yeah. I mean, basically, the thing is, like, the first Tacombi started in Playa del Carmen. It's on the beach, so basically, we set up the same ambience, which like you feel like you're outside.
Playa del Carmen's Cancun, right?
Yeah, it's Cancun.
No, I'm a guy from Staten Island. That's where that's where you go on your prom trip.
Yeah,
you go to Cancun for a week.
I know.
But so if anyone online or any other information we can get, if somebody wants to go eat there, where's it exactly located?
It's 267 Elizabeth. We just got our beer and wine license.
Congratulations.
We introduced some Mexican cocktails like micheladas. We're spiking our horchata with some soju, and we're making some watermelon drinks.
Soju, the loophole to every beer and wine list.
Oui.
But I wanted to thank Oscar for coming on. He'll be in the studio, and we're going to take a break now. This is The Morning After with Jason Colucci. We're going to come back. We're going to have a bunch of different guests. Thank you. Good Morning After.
Barbra Streisand. Barbra Streisand.
Hey, we're back. We're back. Morning after. We're going to go right into our call-in, Chris Balfe. I self-titled Chris Balfe the composting czar of New York City. He works for a company called ESI, and they were one of the first carting companies in New York City to sort of have a sort of a green initiative. They're a global company, but they, you know, the New York City-based operations deal with a lot of high-end restaurants that are trying to, you know, sort of take the next step. And for myself and seeing it on the restaurant side, it's actually cost-effective as for a restaurant and for the carting company. Chris, what's up, man? You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me, Jason?
I can. I know you're upstate somewhere, sort of you're raising a barn with some Amish people, right? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, it's for that's probably the easiest way to explain it. I actually extracted a cast iron tub from a basement that had no stairs.
Wow, that sounds like doing like picking up garbage. It's sort of like the same kind of idea. Can you talk a little bit about your title, the Composting Czar of New York City, and what you guys sort of you specialize in?
Yeah, sure. Composting is pretty simple. It's really just another type of recycling for food waste, which we call a whole bunch of different things. We call it food waste. We call it organic material, because it includes pretty much anything that was once alive. So if you're a restaurant and let's say you buy whole pigs to make everything you can out of that animal, we can take everything that you can't make anything out of and use in the restaurant, like maybe the pig's hoof, right? The hoof doesn't end up in any food.
And you provide actually what we call a tote, which is sort of a large container. And you see them, you know, if you watch a movie that takes place in the suburbs, you kind of could see these big things. They're like 60-gallon size totes. And then from the restaurant side, I always give the argument to operators about saying, like, you're not using any garbage bags. Everything gets consolidated into these totes, and they get picked up, and then they get composted. So it's not like you're wasting, you know, you're going down the Broadway in the summer, and you're walking by a restaurant, and there's 50 garbage bags outside. There's actually two or three of these totes. Do you agree with me on that, or?
Oh, yeah, it's way better. It's a much better system for getting rid of trash, especially for New York, because a rat can't get into the tote.
Yeah.
Whereas a rat can go through a garbage bag sitting on the sidewalk in a couple seconds.
What are some of the restaurants that are using and sort of hotels and stuff that come to mind first?
Well, all Keith McNally's restaurants are pretty much participating in the program now at differing levels. But Keith is one of our big supporters. We really kind of work with the superstars of the restaurant. Well, we like to say we work with all the celebrity chefs and all the non-celebrity chefs as well, because if you do a lot of prep work back of house,
you have a lot of waste.
Yeah, you produce a lot of waste, and waste is expensive, and it's by weight is how we charge you. So at a high-end restaurant that does a lot of prep, 50 to 75% of what that operation produces as waste by weight can typically be composted or recycled as food waste. You could call it either one. So the amount of money that a restaurateur, an owner, an operator can save doing this at a high-end restaurant like Balthazar, like Polino's, is, in some cases, it can be 20%. In some cases, it could be 60%, because what's left? You don't have that much you have a lot of recyclable material that comes out of restaurants.
There's not a ton of stuff, you know, floating around. It actually educates staff, and it even actually makes them think a little bit further when they're working, and maybe they bring that back home. I know most people that work in restaurants, especially in Manhattan, you know, actually are socially aware in a lot of different areas. But if I was a restaurant operator and I was dealing with another company now and I wanted to go in that direction, how would I sort of contact you? Is there a way to get in touch
with you? There's a website. It's nycomposting.com. That's nycomposting.com. And anybody can go to that website, and there's some short videos on how we do this, on, you know, both how we pick it up and then where we take it and what we do with it once we get it there, how we turn this stuff from food waste into what's basically a fertilizer. I don't like to use the term fertilizer because, you know, fertilizer is something you buy in a drum that comes from a company that produces chemicals, and that's not what this stuff is.
No, it actually it's basically fertilizing maybe the Jersey tomatoes the next year, you know, like concern.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you, a lot of the compost that we produce ends up getting bought by high-end golf courses. So it kind of stays within the hospitality industry that way too, which we think is neat. You know, like, well, we like the full circle.
Keeping it in the family is what I like. Chris Balf is here from IESI. I just want to thank him for his time. Chris, any other contact info, or is it just go on that website?
Yeah, if anybody wants to shoot me an email directly, my email is chris@nycomposting.com. That's C-H-R-I-S, chris@nycomposting.com. Please feel free to email me. I'll get back to every single one of you, I promise.
Chris, thank you for your time. Please come back in a few months and talk a little bit more. Come in studio, have a couple of cocktails. Thanks again, man.
All right, Jason. Anything for you. Thank you.
Appreciate it. That was Chris Bell from IESI. I will say, being an Italian-American here, a New York-based person, the sort of carting and the bad name that has come from it and stuff, and how it sort of evolved over the past 10 years where, like, the carting company had a monopoly. And whatever happened in terms of laws and stuff, it's Chris is somebody I will vouch for. I've done business with him for many years. But the whole idea of you sort of being locked into a carting company, this is what you have to use and stuff like that, is done. You know, you can kind of go to anybody. And the idea also of composting and having a tote in-house, I'm telling you, like, it's something as simple as not buying plastic garbage bags saves you $200 to $300 a day. And I know that seems sort of like, you know, minuscule and things, but these things add up. So anyone in other cities that are like sort of, you know, addressing this, I'm telling you straight up, it makes a ton of sense. So I'm going to talk about some projects that Righteous Fiction Productions, which is a production company I started with my business partner, are doing. We started a bunch of different things. Two things went into production. One is we're doing a reality-based restaurant opening, and it's going to show on the internet. And I can't really talk about the restaurant that it is, but I really want to. I'm super excited about it because it's going to be a realistic opening. We're shooting it. There's cameras there. There's going to be, you know, everything from server fights to, you know, chefs, you know, flipping out and, you know, hanging out afterwards. I mean, it's going to be no holds barred because I want to watch it. I mean, really, that's why we kind of did. I've never seen anything like that. I really, really want to watch this thing. We're doing that. I actually had dinner with Arthur Schwartz 2 days ago, and we're working on something with him. He's a legend. He is a canon of knowledge in terms of the Italian cookbook. I have a lot of respect from him, and we're going to actually produce a pilot with him. That's something else that's going on. And we're also going to put some cameras here in the studio. So if anyone wants to watch, you know, my boring self here in the studio talking, we're going to sort of produce that show as well. Anyone else that has any ideas, please contact me a bunch of different ways. I would say contact us through Jason Colucci on Facebook. You know, obviously just Google me. You'll see The Morning After. And we're looking for some new material, something that is not Food Network related. That would be great. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Christoph Hill from Northern Spy Company. And we're going to talk a little bit about the San Francisco chef migration of 2008. Morning After. Paris
seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone
and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars.
We're back. We're back. We're going to go right into our next guest from the Northern Spy Food Company, Christoph Hill. I wrote a little usually like to write a little bio, but basically I had one little thing I thought after meeting with Christoph would sum up Northern Spy Food Company, kind of their, I don't know, mantra or what they sort of stand by, which was Northern Spy Food Company, a market-driven menu where the entrepreneurial spirit is as important as the sustainable message. And we sat down, Christoph, and we had a great meeting at your restaurant, which is gorgeous, by the way. It's on East
12th, between A and B.
And you made a great point. First of all, you're buying 50-50 market to non-market, market-driven to sort of
small, sustainable, local, diverse,
which is a procure and procurement, I think, is amazing. And you like to see the bottom line. You know, you like to make money. You understand that there's a big, bigger picture to this.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about where you guys are at now? And you've been open now for about 2 years.
Yeah, November will be 2 years. We're doing great. I mean, we're not. You know, it's not a. I'm not going to retire on it in a couple of years. I may see actually a touch of my money back in a couple of years, which would be lovely. Anybody who thinks that the restaurant business is a get rich quick scheme. I'm here to dispel that myth, but it's a have lots of fun, quick scheme. And we're doing well. We have a very solid staff now that's been on with us for a long time. We just hired a new chef about 3 weeks ago.
What's his name?
Hadley Schmidt.
Okay.
And he came to us from What Happens When, which closed a little bit earlier than they had planned to. And prior to that, he had worked with John Fraser at Dovetail for 4 years, had worked at Crew, and had worked at Union Pacific way back when with Rocco Despirito. So he has a really great New York City sort of fine dining track record. And we're doing well. And we're sort of like the summer was a little bit slow. We had a little transition with our opening chef leaving, and we're just getting back on track now, doing events. And it's really as good as things have ever been there. It's really a very exciting time.
So if someone came in the restaurant today, you know, it takes a while for a chef to get his flavor into the menu and sort of change a lot of stuff. If they walked in today, the menu is sort of changing day to day, and he's
slowly
getting into the
slowly he's adding some of his things, some of our classics, things that people love, kale salad, things like that will probably be on there forever. But he's starting to bring in his own touch, which is a really kind of contemporary, like gentle sort of approach to, you know, vegetables and produce. And he did a stage at Noma, so he's into this, like, you know, the modern sort
foraging.
Of Danish foraging thing. And on his days off, he goes up to like Westchester County, and like he came back with like chicken mushrooms and something called lady's thumb and all kinds of like other weird herbs. And, you know, that's like what he likes to do, and that's his ethos. So he's sort of starting to add this more of like a free form kind of naturalist approach to the food, where there's really exciting flavors and combinations. We're going to be doing a vegetarian tasting menu, reservations only dinner in about 3 weeks.
Is that sort of, you can do that on a Sunday where you do that?
We usually do those midweek, so it'll be like a Wednesday, October 26th. We're just about to announce it to our mailing list. And it's the first one we'll have done with him, and we're really excited that he was interested in doing a vegetarian menu because, you know, in the sort of the DIY sort of food scene, the Brooklyn Manhattan food scene that's come up, you know, it's several. Sometimes it's like, all, you know, and here we are sitting in Heritage Radio Network, right? It's like we've all made our bones.
Full circle.
It all comes down to pork, right? So everybody's like, you know, pork this, pork that, but it's really nice to see a guy who's really excited about vegetables and is going to make a menu that's really cool about, you know, with vegetables and showcases them in really lovely ways with really interesting flavors.
When you guys opened the restaurant, and we spoke about this briefly, it's interesting. We did a timeline. We did a family tree of everyone that came here between 2000 to 2008 from San Francisco, and there was a big rush, and specifically from two restaurants. Yeah. One was where you were the opening chef for when it opened,
A16.
Which is A16, extremely popular place, and the other one was SPQR.
Right, which is sort of the younger sister of A16.
And we have everything from Northern Spy Food Company to the meatball shop, which was Daniel.
Yeah. So you got Daniel at Meatball Shop. You opened that. You have Nate Appleman came down and opened Polina's before. Now he's at Chipotle. Yeah. You have Chris Baer, who came to
Brooklyn Larder.
He's now at Brooklyn Larder. Some of the others have left. Jane Sang, who's a really, really talented
chef. She's about jumping around
chef.
A lot. She's had a little bit of luck with some places that open and close. Yeah.
But she's so talented that when she lands on her, like, in the right spot, she will blow that place up. So stay tuned for Jane Sang.
100%.
She's unstoppable.
And then also, you know, we have Chris Gerwig. He went back to California.
LA,
we have Almond Bear. I'm just going down. We have Tony Cotero. He's actually the chef de cuisine at Fedora. But it's insane. I mean, it's two restaurants, and there were two specific moves that happened in New York City. But when you worked at A16, you had spoken a little bit about you were a young chef. You were about 32, and it was a really volume-based place.
Yeah.
And what was that? What was that like?
It was really intense. I mean, it was frankly a little bit, over my head, in over my head rather. But I, assimilated it quickly. I'm a quick learner. I spent 4 months in Italy, in the same, the same areas that you're talking about, Arthur Schwartz, that has written about and studied.
Salerno,
Naples, especially inland, Avellino, Nusco, the region they call Irpinia, which is like the inland of Campania, where a lot of the great Aglianico and Falanghina, all that stuff is from Irpinia.
Well, it's not fall unless it's Falanghina. That's
exactly.
What I said.
Falanghina, baby. So that's the area that I was familiar with. So it was, it was intense, but I like to think I'm a reasonably smart guy. I hired Nate Appleman. I hired Liza Shaw, who later became the chef and is now opening her own sub shop in San Francisco. So I hired Jane Sang.
Yeah.
I hired Chris Baer. I hired Chris Gerwig. So I'm a bit talented for hiring well. I mean,
and
these people go places.
And you're also moving into like a lot of people, when they have a lot of success in their first restaurant, they jump into the second one. But you're taking a specific different approach. You were talking a little bit about doing retail or
what interests me now is entrepreneurship with a social bent. I mean, I think everybody should have an opportunity in their lives to make a little money, experience the sort of like the entrepreneurial drive. And what interests me now more than being a chef is being sort of an entrepreneur and like creating a stage where people can really do good work. And we all have we all grow out of it, like then because at some point everyone's going to go on, right? I mean, one day everybody will move on to other projects, and hopefully you look back and say, Northern Spy, that was an awesome place to work.
It was definitely a landmark.
Great bosses.
Definitely
great,
a landmark opening.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when it opened, it was definitely, it got a lot. I mean, and it's still a place. I mean, and the one thing we spoke about, which was extremely humbling, because you deal with a lot of market-driven restaurants, and they're like, so not necessarily highbrow, but you're doing delivery, which is great.
We deliver
it's
for
like
lunch,
it makes
yes.
sense. Like
right.
We're open.
We
have guys
lunch.
Prepping here. Somebody wants a hamburger. We'll take it to their house.
Yeah, sausage, biscuits, and gravy. We do it all. So I'm not going to say it's the core of our business, but we like to do it. I mean, it's part of our business model is to be part of the community, sort of meet the needs.
And you're a recent dad. What's that like balancing the two for all of our?
Very challenging.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Kids, kids take it to a whole different level. But very excited, and it's a whole new form of entrepreneurship.
Well, in a few minutes, we're gonna go and talk to Dr. Brennan from Dr. Brennan Mac Repair. But is there anything future projects or anything you wanted to talk about with the restaurant or any with the chef menus other than the vegetarian?
I would just encourage all your listeners to come down to the restaurant over the next month or two and just try it out, because we have lots of very exciting new dishes coming onto the menu. Hadley's a really sharp guy. He's got mad game, and he's bringing it. It's very exciting what's happening.
And you have a background in, you're a chef, you're operations. I mean, you've done a lot of stuff. Is there anything that you associate yourself with if you guys do eventually write a book or anything and you sort of associate, do you associate yourself with a chef or like one of my,
now I associate myself with sort of a creator of a space, I'm an entrepreneur, a developer, I want to be known as a guy who develops a great place, a great atmosphere, a place for people to work.
Well, I highly recommend checking out the restaurant, and it is located on...
It's 511 East 12th Street in the East Village between Avenues A and B.
Open Monday through Sunday?
All 7 days a week, lunch, brunch, and dinner.
Thank you for your time. We're gonna we're going to go into Dr. Brendan, Dr. Brendan Mac Repair. Brendan, are you there?
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, doctor? Everyone this week, and you know, I hate to make light of the situation, but everyone had their Steve Jobs specialist and their Mac specialist. So I called you at midnight the day he passed away, and I said I had to have you on, even if it was a call-in. Can you? I mean, other than talking about Apple and Macintosh and stuff, because I think it affects the food world and helps it out so much. Can you talk about what the world you operate in, which is the secondary sort of market, and how do you think that's going to be affected?
The world that I operate in, how that will be affected by the death of Steve Jobs?
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like it's? I mean, obviously, Apple's still going to need stuff to be fixed and technicians and stuff. But do you see any? Is it 3 or 4 years down the road where you would see a little bit of a difference, or what are your thoughts on everything?
You know, it's hard to say. Hopefully, things just keep going along as they've been. I don't really see any reason why there would be a big dip in the need for what we're doing or the need for Apple products. I would say that Tim Cook seems like a fine leader for the company, and hopefully there really is no difference.
100%. Any other? I mean, did you ever get a chance? I mean, because you're a player in that world, did you ever get a chance to meet him or go to see one of those CEO speeches or anything like that in person?
No, nothing like that. That would have been great, though.
He's definitely an inspirational person. He's probably it's a huge thing. And the Apple also, 3 days before the 4S was introduced, I believe. Talk about that. What's new with that phone?
There's a lot new with it. I guess the one of the main things would be that we're going to the dual A5 processor, which is going to give a big boost in performance.
I love a boost in performance.
That's probably one of the number one things that people are going to see, is that the phone itself is just a lot faster, a lot more powerful. It's the same as the iPad 2, for those who don't know. And then another big addition is Siri, which I need to get a little more up to speed on, but basically that is the voice control portion of the phone.
I'm on the phone now.
Apparently, also means butt in Japanese.
We're talking to Dr. Brendan from Dr. Brendan Mac Repair. He's just kind of called in to talk about Steve Jobs briefly, and also the new Mac dust. Brendan, can you tell us if somebody wanted to have something repaired, where should they go?
Oh, come on down to Dr. Brendan. We have a location in the East Village and in Slope on Fifth Avenue, and another one up in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Okay, doctor, thanks again for your time. We'll talk in a couple of weeks. We're going to take a break now. This is Jason Colucci, The Morning After. We're going to come back. I have my team of specialists from Terroir Tribeca to try my sponsor's wine, 86list.com. Morning After. Back, we're back. This is The Morning After with Jason Colucci. We're going to go right into the 86list.com hot job of the week. Laura Wirtz, go ahead.
Hi, Jason. Well, this week we have for our hot job, Rucola Brooklyn, which is a northern Italian cuisine restaurant in Borum Hill, Brooklyn. And they're looking for AM sous chef and line cooks right now. They're open for brunch and lunch and dinner and breakfast during the week. And they are looking to expand. So they're really looking to fill some positions right now. They're actually planning on opening a new restaurant in Williamsburg in January. So I think there's a lot of room there.
That place is so hot right now. If anyone who watches Vice or Munchies, April Bloomfield went there, right, on her little Munchies expedition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what is what else is going on? You see a lot of resumes. You see a lot of bad resumes. What's one common thing you see that's horrible about a food resume? Embellishment or what?
You know, I can't tell you how many resumes I've gotten that don't even have the right contact information on there. So I would say that's a really good place to start.
Contact information? Wow.
They don't even have the right phone number because they have an old email and I can't get a hold of them.
Laura Wertz, 86list.com. Thank you for calling in with the hot job of the week. We'll talk to you next week. How's the wedding going? Wedding planning going well?
Oh, it's a big week. Lots of things are happening this week, so I'm busy with all kinds of things.
Okay, just make sure the videographer, make sure he's shooting VHS. That's all I recommend. Talk to you next week. Okay. We're going to go right
Thanks
into...
Thanks for the tip, Jason.
Anytime. We're going to go right into a team I assembled. I met this group here early spring. I had met them a couple years ago. But I sort of befriended them, and my sponsor was asking me, Chad Turnbull from, and this is not my alcohol sponsor, my AA sponsor is actually the sponsor of the show. That's a different guy. It's a joke. He asked me to do a bit and ask some people to try the wine, and I was really excited about it, and I thought of where to go except to Terroir Tribeca and the entire Terroir Empire. There's three locations, but I identify most with Terroir Tribeca. Tobias Roer, Jesse Kiefer, and Will Piper. Am I right there?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So they're all sharing a microphone because we need all of them in here. Can you guys, before we go into talking about Terroir and sort of the business, can you guys kind of comment about Savorian's Bogatelle, the Grenache Blanca, if you will? Jesse, please take.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had Grenache Blanca usually from Priorat. Terra Alta is pretty close, and I expected it actually to be a little bit fuller. But it does have a nice finish, a little bit brighter than I expected. I was a fan.
And this is something you would recommend with a seafood or something?
Yeah, seafood. I feel like this is everybody who comes into Terroir, almost all people ask for Sauvignon Blanc, and I feel like this is that one grape that that I could direct them towards to try something different.
Well, speaking of people coming in and asking for something, you guys always have great marketing. And who are your two bosses? I would like you to say them.
Well, our GM is Nicole Ciani, and then, yeah, of course, we've got Mr. PG, Mr. Paul Greco.
And
is Marco Canora.
Marco Canora.
Sorry, I said that. I'm thinking, but you guys have these great marketing things where you do Summer of Riesling. I came up with a few extra ones, and I thought, I don't know if they're really funny, but I two marketing things, different varietals, a Minute of Malbec, Fall of Falanghina, the Summer of Sasakaya. I don't know if that's going to really work for you financially, but I thought it'd be a little pricey. You guys have this little niche where you're highly educated in wine. You sort of take the edge off when people walk in there, and you make it fun. You know, you sort of make wine fun, which for a really long time it was, and it was sort of this. It's almost like the alt world. There's a lot of people that are dictating. You know, the Robert Parkers of the world. What was good and what was bad. Can you talk a little bit? Actually, I'm going to turn the mic to Tobias if he can comment on that.
Okay, I'll take it from here. I guess I came from a more fine dining background, and that was how I got to know some of the people who work at Terroir, and was really fortunate to join the team.
Fine dining? Can you say what restaurant you had?
Well, I worked at Tabla and at Gramercy Tavern.
Amazing.
I certainly wasn't, like Le Bernardin or anything like that. I wasn't doing this for years, but I did get some experience in a more formal restaurant. And most of the people who we have on the team at Terroir and at all the places, at all the locations, are it's sort of a theme is that you have experience in other places so that you can go to a more casual setting and still like back it up and have all the abilities to give everybody a good experience and also have knowledge about the product you're serving. I'm still learning a ton. Every day there's something new on the list, and there's always something I haven't had before. And even if you've had something once or twice, it certainly doesn't make you an expert about it. So it's really rewarding to have 25 whites, 25 reds by the glass open all the time, and work with people like Will and Jesse who bring it.
I had asked you guys. I had an old 19. I think it might have been published in the late 70s, early 80s.
76
Wine Procedures book, and I asked all you guys to look through it. Will, can you sort of talk about, or Jesse, whoever, to the things you guys pulled out of this Wine Procedure book? That
There are these great old pictures of, you know, the captain in this like super formal like doorman jacket, standing over the guests, and you know. With heading titles like "What is to be done?" and some of the tips here are amazing, and I don't think you get away with anymore.
Any other stuff that you can
this is the real gem. If the nationality of the guest is known, a wine from his country, if available, may be suggested.
Well, yeah, definitely. You know, in 1920, I really wanted to push some Lebanese wine there on some in Beirut. I really wanted to crush the whole Beirut thing in the 70s, 80s, and the wine wasn't that great at that point, and I couldn't.
Oh well, it's funny. It was. Like, people are really responsive to Chateau Mussar from Lebanon. It's a different world for sure.
So Will, you, I feel like you've been there the longest, right?
Since it opened. Yeah.
Can you talk about the genesis of opening there in Tribeca and how it's come?
I mean, really crazy friends and family. Everybody showed up. Lots of crazy wine. The neighborhoods really responded well to us.
Yeah.
Because I think that there were a lot of places like Tribeca Grill, Montrachet before. You could eat and drink and spend a ton of money and whatever, and then the low end there's some other stuff too, but there's not like a casual
place,
middle range place in Tribeca. So
I agree 100%. I worked for Drinini Porn for about 4 years, and I was always downtown, and you know, and Oscar, we would always go out for a drink afterwards, and you can never kind of figure out, you know, if you were too early there was nothing, and if you were too late you might as well take a cab uptown. And when you guys opened, I remember just kind of walking in there, and in the daytime it was, you know, a Wall Street crowd, whatever, Dirty World right now, but it's still word right now. But it's still, it was a crowd, and then at night it becomes an industry place. I mean, restaurant people go there. It's a lot of wine importers have their exclusive tastings that they invite the sommeliers and the wine directors to do tastings there late night, and that says a lot about, you know, what you guys are doing.
Trust us enough.
So Jess, any other, what else is going on over there?
Well, I was just thinking about the half hour of Jerez.
That's, I personally would like more than half an hour with Sherry if I could have my druthers.
Well, I want to also, I open the studio always to the staff of Terroir. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more with Terroir, and also we're going to do a bit. Where in the world is Matthew Bourgeois? I have him out in California. He's going to try a restaurant. It's a secret restaurant. Morning After. This song, Fish Stash, it reminds me of the old days, you know. Jerry's gone, but Fish is here, that's what I say. I'm going to go to a guest. Where in the world is Matthew Bourgeois. Matthew Bourgeois is was my college roommate, one of my best friends. And this guy, he's in a new city every week. And I decided, hey, how can I poach off of the corporation he works for and have him try a restaurant in a city? I wanted you to get to A16 and to sort of surprise Christoph, but you couldn't make it that north. You're in L.A. So I said, hey, why not talk about In-N-Out Burger, the secret menu? Matthew, you there?
Hey. Yeah, I'm here. What's up, Jason?
All right, so talk to me. So you walk into In-N-Out Burger, and In-N-Out Burger is a very popular chain in the West Coast, and they're sort of branching out a little bit. But for us East Coasters that think Shake Shack is In-N-Out, which is not, can you talk a little bit about, if I walked in there and I wanted something that wasn't on the menu, what is that secret menu?
Yeah, there's a couple different options. One of the most popular is obviously style, so you might have heard of
animal style.
Animal style is a combination of sort of like a Russian dressing, a slice of cheese, and grilled onions. Really good. You can get it on your fries or on your burger.
So if you walked in there, it wouldn't be on. You would say animal style.
No, yeah, you'd have to know about it. So you'd order for instance, I'd get a double animal style, and then also if you're looking to save, not eat some carbohydrates, you can get double animal style, protein style.
Well, protein.
And they'll hold the bread for
well,
you.
Well, you know, you've seen this picked up by a couple places. I think Bear Burger, which is a place, they have one in Park Slope now, but there's also one in Astoria, Queens, and they serve it in bib lettuce or, there's no bun involved.
Exactly. They do that here at In-N-Out very well, I might add.
So, Christoph, one of the chef and owner of Northern Spy Food Company, was in here, and he talked about the assembly line aspect of In-N-Out. When you were in there, how long did it take for your food to come out?
The only reason it took a little bit of time is because the cars wrapped around the entire location, and the inside line was backed up to the door. But other than that, and I've never met such a happy, more positive workforce. Like, they all love to be there. They love their job. They're getting paid a little bit more than your average fast food restaurant.
Yeah, no, I agree. I remember I spoke to the managers over there, and they fly all of their In-N-Out Burger picks a vacation for all of their managers 1 week out of the year, and they pick and they fly them out other than their normal vacation. So they're very like a socially responsible, and they're not sort of pigs in terms of opening 1,000 locations. So Matt, where have you been in the past 6 weeks?
I've been in New Orleans, Austin, Damariscotta, Maine, New York City, Chicago, Atlanta, and Montreal. And now I'm sitting here in Malibu, California right now.
Okay, cool. Well, tell if you see, run into Kim Kardashian, tell her I'm going to watch her wedding tonight on I think it's on E. It's a 2-hour special. So if you run into her, tell her I am TiVoing it. But other than that, you're going to be in studio next week, and you're going to kind of hang out with the morning after, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be in New York City for a couple of events, and I'd be stoked to come into the studio and talk to you guys.
Cool. Thank you, Matthew Bourgeois. We'll see you next week. Matthew Bourgeois, Where in the World is Matthew Bourgeois? I wanted to thank everyone in studio today. We'll go around. We'll start with Oscar.
Thanks very much for having me, Jason.
Can you say who you
beautiful.
Are?
My name is Oscar. I work at Fonda Nolita, and you guys are welcome to come at any time to have some good tacos and beer.
Thank you. Christoph Hill?
Yeah, Northern Spy Food Company, 511 East 12th Street, between A and B. Come down, try it. You'll love it.
Tewar?
Yeah.
All together now.
Yeah, all together now. Yeah.
Three, two, one, go.
Yeah, come check us out at Tewar Tribeca and try something different. Don't stick to what you're used to. Ask us.
We'll find something for you to enjoy, we promise.
Also, 86list.com, Dr. Brendan Mac Repair, Matthew in the World, Matthew Bourgeois. I would like to thank Savorian Wines, our sponsor, Bogatel. The morning after, see you next week. Thank you.
listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following message has been brought to you by Taste Brooklyn. Our city's finest chefs partner with farmers and local vineyards next to the Green Market for an extraordinary outdoor culinary festival. Try exquisite delicacies using locally grown seasonal delights on the plaza outside Brooklyn's Borough Hall. Top chefs and artisans will offer sumptuous fare paired with premium wines, all to empower our neediest children to get healthy. The mighty FDNY and DSNY harbor their own culinary masters in uniform. They will cook off against the pros. Sample delicious cuisine without stressing over a reservation while supporting a worthy cause. Taste Brooklyn's Field to Fork Outdoor Culinary Festival, Saturday, October 15th, 2011, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn more and buy tickets at tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. That's TasteOfBrooklyn.blogspot.com. This is a public service announcement from Sea to Table and Slow Food NYC.
On October 11th, sustainable seafood distributor Sea to Table will join Slow Food New York City to host an event celebrating the bounty of local New York seafood. The event, Slow You, Sustainable Sashimi, will feature a tasting of four fish species from local Montauk waters. The event will take place on Tuesday, October 11th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Institute of Culinary Education, 50 West 23rd Street in Manhattan. Tickets are $25 for Slow Food members, $35 for non-members. Visit slowfoodnyc.org for more information about this event and how to get tickets.
This is a public service announcement from American Meat Documentary.
American Meat, a new documentary that chronicles America's grassroots revolution in sustainable meat production, is going to screen at Movie House at Third Ward in Williamsburg on Sunday, October 9th, in partnership with Local Food at 7, and the film will be at 8. There will be a panel discussion afterwards with Stacy Murphy of BK Farmyards, filmmakers Graham Merriweather and Mimo Salazar, and other food producers and advocates. That's Sunday. At 7 p.m., show up for Local Food. At 8 p.m., the film screens. At 9:30 p.m., the panel discussion. The suggested donation is $10, and the address is 3rd Ward at 195 Morgan Avenue.